Mr. Howard?
Good morning.
Good morning.
And may it please the court, I'm Steve Howard and I have the honor of representing John Kelsey on this appeal from the Nebraska Workers' Compensation Court. There's plenty of appellate law to support that a determination of maximum medical improvement is a fact-finding endeavor that is something that the trial court determines that will not be disturbed on appeal. But that finding of maximum medical improvement has to be consistent throughout the award. And in this case, what the court awarded was both, what the court determined factually was both a finding that Mr. Kelsey was at maximum medical improvement, and the language of the case law was not going to get any better or any worse, yet in the same award granted him what he'd wanted all along, which was the shoulder surgery. And we just believe that's irreconcilable. And there are certainly examples of cases in the Workers' Compensation Court where a worker can be at maximum medical improvement and be in need of surgery. But this need for surgery essentially came back from the original injury. And we just think the judge got it backwards, with all respect to the trial court, got it backwards to say that, Mr. Kelsey, you're at maximum medical improvement, you have a permanent impairment rating, but you can go get the surgery that you've been asking for all along. And if that, and I'm reading from paragraph 6 of the court's award, should that surgery cause show that you have an increase in impairment or decrease in impairment, the parties may petition the court for a further hearing concerning the change in the plaintiff's permanent impairment. Well, if the trial court is envisioning a change in the permanent impairment, then he's not at maximum medical improvement. And, you know, there isn't a whole lot of case law on this because it's very straightforward and it's a very simple concept that if you've plateaued medically, you're at maximum medical improvement. But if there is something that'll make you better, some treatment modality that will improve your symptoms, then you're not at maximum medical improvement. And so that's really our argument today. The case that's the closest on point is the Yarns decision, Yarns versus Leon Plastics from about 1990, which most often is cited as the case where the trial court can point to the plaintiff's refusal to undergo surgery as being an element of their elevated impairment or elevated disability. But Yarns also stands for the proposition that if you're going to have surgery, you're not at maximum medical improvement. Yarns is sort of the flip side of our scenario. But this man needed surgery, and it's not a case where he gets hurt on the job, then he plateaus medically, so he's at maximum medical improvement, and then after that, some change in his condition occurs. You know, we have clients that have hardware in their joints, and they're at maximum medical improvement. And over time, the hardware can come out because the bones have fused and it's reasonable to take it out. We have scenarios in the court where a person has a bad leg injury and they plateau medically. So they're at MMI. And over time, walking on that leg causes the other leg to go bad or a condition in the spine. And then they need a subsequent surgery. But this surgery, according to Exhibit 10, was indicated right from the start, and the court adopted the recommendation from Dr. Lee, the orthopedic surgeon, for the surgery. The man gets hurt in May of 2014. By September, surgery is recommended. In February, he is seen by the defense examiner, who says you have 1%, you don't need surgery. But the trial court then says, well, you're both at maximum medical improvement, and you need the surgery. So, unless the court is going to revisit the definition of maximum medical improvement, we do think this is an abuse of discretion standard on appeal. Unless the court is going to go back and re-examine what it really means to be at maximum medical improvement, we do think that this court should reverse and remand and on a finding of an abuse of discretion to say that he's not at maximum medical improvement. What we're asking for is reinstatement of a short period of temporary partial disability, which was after the 1% rating, and that's the subject of those non-pro-tunk orders, and then to leave the matter open for a subsequent finding of permanency after the shoulder surgery. So the second half of our appeal is based on the Rodriguez versus Hirsch Motors case, which says that unless you're at MMI for all of the anatomy that was injured in the accident, you're not at MMI for anything. And the trial court in this case did say that the spinal injuries were maximum medical improvement, shoulders not. Anything can happen during surgery. We think that he is not at maximum medical improvement by definition. Once the court says you're going to be awarded the surgery, and there have been a few cases since the briefs were filed that this court has addressed a situation where we have this determination of maximum medical improvement, but the court has not taken the occasion to revisit or somehow modify that definition. So unless there's any questions, that's really what I wanted to say today. So, okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Well, I'll reserve the balance of my time.
May it please the court, my name is L. Tyler Laughlin, and I represent Sandy Pine Systems in this matter. Your Honors, this is an issue of fact. The determination of maximum medical improvement is an issue of fact. There's substantial evidence in the record to support the court's finding of maximum medical improvement, and there was no clear error in finding maximum medical improvement. This entire appeal argument rests on the determination of maximum medical improvement. If the court finds that maximum medical improvement or the finding of maximum medical improvement was proper, they need not address the second half of the appeal.
Is there an inconsistency in finding maximum medical improvement and then
Judge, I don't believe that there's an inconsistency. I think it's important to look at the timeline as to what happened as far as the treatment. Exhibit 10 outlines when plaintiff saw Dr. Lee in September of 2013. That is where the surgical recommendation is discussed, but it should be noted in that exhibit that they also discuss, quote, other non-operative interventions. Plaintiff is then seen by Dr. Noble in February of 2014, which is contained in Exhibit 23. At that time, he's found to be at maximum medical improvement by Dr. Noble. This is the date that the court ultimately adopts as the date of maximum medical improvement. So we've had a passage of time, and he sees a new provider who determines he's at maximum medical improvement. It should be also noted that he only saw Dr. Lee one time for that examination in September of 13. Then in August of 2014, approximately a month before trial, plaintiff sees Dr. Ward, his own expert, and this is found in Exhibit 1. Dr. Ward ultimately finds that he has reached maximum medical improvement for all of his conditions. So subsequent doctors determined that this individual reached maximum medical improvement, even though another doctor had given a surgical recommendation. You've essentially got a battle of the experts, and the court adopted the opinions of Dr. Noble and Dr. Ward in making a factual determination that he had reached maximum medical improvement.
But didn't the court also then make a factual determination that there was still a need for the surgery?
The court does then make a determination that he's entitled to future medical care and uses Dr. Lee's opinion for adopting that. I think that this is a situation, a good example that I can think of in a situation is someone who has a major knee condition, tears up their knee. They go into a doctor and treat for that knee, and they treat and treat and treat, and the doctor tells them, you need a knee replacement. We're not going to do it now. We're going to do it sometime. You need a knee replacement. That doesn't mean that they can't be found at maximum medical improvement at that time, that their condition is plateaued, and you know later on down the road that they're going to have that knee replacement. It's similar to what's
going on here. But nobody told
him
he didn't need it right now, right? I mean, they said we'll try some conservative measures, which is typical.
They told him that they discussed surgery and also discussed other non-operative
right
conditions. And
so isn't it more akin to the bad knee where they say, well, we'll send you to physical therapy, but if that doesn't help, we're going to have to go in and scope it or do surgery?
Yes, I can see what you're saying. I think that it also, though, does go back to the fact that almost a year passes when he sees Dr. Ward in August of 14. He sees another provider who says, you know, it's been a year. I think you're maximum medical improvement. I mean, who knows what, if he would have gone back to see Dr. Lee in August of, or excuse me, if he sees Dr. Lee instead of Ward in 2014, if he does not agree that he's maximum medical improvement at that point. Seeing the subsequent doctors, to me, it gives the court the evidence that they need, the expert opinions that they need to make a factual determination that the individual has reached maximum medical improvement.
I understand what you're saying about the maximum medical improvement, and I understand the factual basis, and I know that's what the court found. But when there was prior evidence to show that he needed to have this surgery, and the court adopts that and says, yes, he needs the surgery, and he should have the surgery, doesn't that become inconsistent that he has then reached maximum medical improvement? Because you don't know what's going to happen once the surgery takes place.
Correct. And there can be another period of time where he's entitled to temporary total disability benefits, where he's taken back off work. His condition had plateaued to where he's no longer entitled to benefits. Then when he ultimately goes back to Dr. Lee to presumably schedule the surgery, have the surgery, he is then back in a period of time where he's undergoing treatment and entitled to benefits until he regains that period of maximum medical improvement. There can be another period of time, which in this case, it's not part of this present appeal, but that is what has transpired. As I addressed, it is our position that the court's determination of maximum medical improvement was proper and supported by substantial evidence. Therefore, the court need not address the determination of entitlement to additional permanency benefits as outlined in the second half of plaintiff's appeal. And if there are no other questions, I appreciate the time.
Thank you. How much time does Mr. Howard have remaining?
I got the year wrong. It was 2013 when he's heard and not 2014. So that happens in oral argument. Anyway, forgive me. It's perfectly fine for the trial court to adopt hybrid opinions from different doctors, but not when they clash with one another. The one thing that I would mention is the only mechanism for the court, for the trial court, to award the additional temporary benefits that the appellee spoke to is through a modification. And I don't think this award has the word modification or modify in it. There's no reference to 48.140.
Well, and doesn't modification require 6 months to pass?
It does. And I don't think the legislature would have intended to say you get your award, but by the way, or you get your surgery, you're going to have to wait 6 months. So anyway, I think the court is well aware of our position, and I would just remind the court of Mr. Kelsey's testimony that he was trying to get the surgery. The delay is not as in Yarns, where the patient plaintiff is the one that somehow caused delay. So that's all. Thank you very
much.
Thank you.
Thank you. The case is submitted. Counsel, you're excused, and we are in recess.